Thought it might be kind of fun to get us started with a little outdoor music here to start our kind of outdoor environment day on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. And we're going to start our show by talking with you about bats. They play an important role in our environment, and we're going to take a look at bats and how they can help and how we can help increase their populations. A couple of guests for you. Paul White, one of our guests, a mammal ecologist with the DNR's Bureau of Natural Heritage Conservation. He's worked in the field of bat ecologies, long time, isn't it? It was about 2007, was it?
Correct, yeah.
2007, he currently helps monitor the health and population trends in our Wisconsin bat population. He also coordinates volunteer efforts and public awareness about the importance of bats. And Paul, great to have you with us again.
Thanks, Larry. Pleasure to be here.
Nice to have you here. Mary Dussling with us as well. She owns Best Bat Houses and makes hand-built Bat Conservation International certified bat houses. They're really cool bat houses. We may have a photo up. If we don't, I'll send you to her Facebook page or her web page, and you can take a look at them. Mary, great to have you here as well.
Thank you very much, Larry.
Appreciate having you here. So let's talk bats. What questions do you have about bats? Have you put up bat houses in your yard? Join the conversation. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Mary, how'd you get interested in bats? Where does that come from?
Well, mosquitoes have always loved me. And yeah. I bought a property with a lot of trees on, and I thought, oh, I bet I'm going to have a lot of mosquitoes here. And there's a little house up in the tree, and I thought, well, that's got to be a bat house, but I'd never seen anything go in or come out. So I started researching about bat houses and where to put a bat house. Well, come to find out, there was nothing correct about the house. It was in the wrong location. It was the wrong size, wrong color, facing the wrong direction. And
other than that, it was fine. It was fine.
And in learning about that, I, of course, was reading about bats and absolutely fell in love with bats and how beneficial they are to our environment. It's just absolutely amazing. So I started building bat houses and got a website, and I've just really been having a good time with it, and I feel like I'm helping our bats.
I think you are definitely doing that. Paul, did you were you a mosquito guy, or was what got you interested?
Well, I grew up in northern Wisconsin, Aaron County, so you know,
we
used to always have wildlife nearby, and definitely bats were a common occurrence, not only outside, but perhaps in a cabin as well. But I would have to say Dave Riddell, my predecessor, definitely fanned the flames of the passion that I have for bats.
Great guy, mm-hmm. great guy. May he rest in peace. Why are bats so important to our ecosystem?
Well, they're important for many reasons, but one of which is they're the primary nighttime predator of night flying insects. So we think about forestry pests, agricultural pests, and even human pests. They do a lot of the pest control that we often are sleeping while bats are taking care of, providing or protecting our crops, whether it's soybeans, corn, but then, you know, just keeping our forests healthy as well. In the Southwest, they help disperse seeds, but then also pollinate many of the things that we consume, whether it's, bananas, mangoes, even coffee plants. And then, of course, we wouldn't have tequila if it wasn't for bats. And so next time you drink a margarita, Rita, please raise a glass for bats.
Now, why is that?
They pollinate the agave plant, which is what produces that.
Okay, yeah. I got you. How many bat species do we have here in Wisconsin?
We have eight different species.
Eight species?
Yep, and they can loosely be categorized by how they deal with Wisconsin winters, four of which will decide to stay and search for a cave, mine, a tunnel, something that would provide suitable hibernation temperatures, or four would continue further south, whether it's Missouri, Florida, Mexico, to be able to continue to consume insects while it's still warm out. So.
Oh, very cool. And Mary, you have how many bat houses do you have around your property these days?
Well, actually, it's kind of an embarrassing story. My property backs up to a gravel pit, so therefore I have a gravel pit. And I would have to get a telephone pole auger in there to drill a hole to mount a bat house. So I think I found a spot on my house that I can mount one. So I'm looking for someone to come out and mount it, and hopefully I'll have success.
Well, I hope so, too. And Rob in Milwaukee actually called with a question. He wondered how you can control parasites in bat houses. Is that an issue in bat houses?
So there are many different parasites that will follow bats as they move from different roost to roost. And I think probably the most important thing is to, especially in the winter months, is if possible to try and remove that bat house and clean it to the extent possible. You know, using a 10% bleach solution would probably be your best bet. Obviously, there are some areas where bats roost that people can't necessarily do that, like an attic space or something like that. At that point, you know, maybe spot treatment in some of those areas would help reduce that load.
And Mary, when you make your bat houses, are they cleanable? Can you get into those houses and clean them out?
Well, they don't open up. Excuse me. I build them so well that they just don't open up. And they're screwed together with exterior grade screws that I put wood putty over for added weatherability. And I have read, and Paul, correct me if I'm wrong, but in the spring of the year, before, when you're 100% sure the bats have not returned to the roost yet, to take a garden hose and spray it up in there.
Garden hose, and definitely also, you know, look for any other foreign pests that might be in there, like a mud dauber nest or something like that. Using a putty knife to scrape off that is definitely encouraging more bat activity and reducing some of those other pests as well.
Yeah. We have Jeanette in Madison with a question. Let's go there. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, good morning. I have a girlfriend that saw two bats just a week and a half ago out near Devil's Lake. I think she said Parfrae's Glen.
Yeah.
And she saw one along the river and one in the woods. So these were two separate bats, and it was during the day. So I guess two questions. One is, isn't it a little early? And two, they were out during the day. That seems kind of odd.
Okay, good questions. Paul, you want to take a crack at that?
Sure. Thank you, Janet, for reporting those observations. We've actually received nearly 100 of those types of observations this year, starting as early as January. And primarily, a couple of weeks ago, obviously, we had really nice weather. And so I think it was kind of a perfect storm for a lot of reasons to see bat activity, one of which is just there's a lot more people out enjoying the weather, whether talking, you know, walking your dog or the like. And so there's more eyes to see bats that potentially would be flying. But also, there are healthy bats that may leave sites, such as a big brown bat, and actually take advantage of some of the foraging opportunities that, you know, insects might be around, or even try and get water that's available. And so those might actually fly during the day, but more likely white-nose syndrome is forcing bats to leave, especially around hibernation sites. We're seeing a lot more bat activity because of white-nose syndrome. Bats that are affected by this disease are often forced to leave their hibernation sites and very low on energy reserves. And then fortunate, we had a week or two, or at least a week there, where we had some insects flying. So that might have helped a little bit with some of the prolonging of a bat's life there. But unfortunately, it probably has a lot to do with white-nose syndrome.
Oh, that's too bad. So we see them in the daytime. It's likely they're they're short on food. They need to get out and get something, and because they're sick.
Right. And so we've seen this out east. We've seen this in some of our larger hibernation sites, and certainly Devil's Lake and a variety of other, you know, locations across the state, where, you know, this is a fungal disease. It affects hibernating bats. We have approximately 47 different species in the country, and half of those rely on hibernation as a way to survive. And like I said, four of our species rely on hibernation to survive. So when it affects hibernating bats, it can potentially affect a large portion of the bats that we see in the landscape.
Oh. And Mary, you're obviously, bats are not going to hibernate in your houses. What bats are typically attracted to your bat house, or any bat house for that matter?
Well, the big browns and the little browns are the ones most found in bat houses, and there's different species. I, of course, am not a bat specialist, but that we have big browns and little browns in Wisconsin. And I can't tell them apart unless they're side by side.
Not the easiest thing in the world to
they
do.
They are so very cute, though.
So how helpful, Paul, would a bat, would constructing and placing bat houses around the state, how helpful would that be?
Extremely helpful, especially when you consider white nose syndrome. We know, at least through our monitoring efforts, we probably know of over 200 roosts across the state, and that's broken up between little browns and big browns, as Mary had mentioned. But over half of those known roosts are from bat houses. So we know that they provide suitable opportunities for bats to not only find places in the spring that are protected from predators, but also get a lot of that thermal energy that they need to, raise a pup. But they're allowed, they often offer opportunities for bats to raise their pups. And then to have a successful pup means that they would be able to be protected and get a lot of that thermal energy that comes from a bat house as well. Yeah. So, yeah, very important.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Peter in Muskego emailed to ask, if he puts a bat house up in his yard, will the bats eat a noticeable amount of mosquitoes? And I've heard all kinds of stories about bats eating their weight in mosquitoes. It's hard for me to believe that in an individual day.
Well, so I think the catch is mosquito-sized insects is what often is quoted. Ah. And so certainly they do eat some mosquitoes, but it's not the extent that I think we'd like to hear. Is he going to notice appreciable differences, of putting up a bat house and actually attracting bat houses or bats to that bat house? Maybe not. But I do know that just echolocation in the area, bats, not only navigating but also trying to capture insects, whether it's, mosquitoes or other types of insects, it can deter other insects from being in that area because they realize that they could be the next meal. So it certainly could be very helpful to put up a bat house, absolutely.
How big are the bat houses, Mary?
Well, the single chamber is 24 inches wide, and then it's about 28 inches tall. And my chambers, the spacers I use to create the chambers is 3/4 inch. So, and the single chamber house will hold between 50 and 75 bats.
Oh, my goodness.
And the four chamber house obviously has four chambers, and it's 17.5 inches wide and probably 31 inches tall, and that will house between 200 and 250 bats.
Wow. Well, you've got that many bats flying around in the evening. They're going to take care of mosquitoes and other insects.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine otherwise. So, Peter, it wouldn't hurt you to put one up. Go ahead and get one and put it up. Todd in La Crosse has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Todd.
Hi. Hi, yeah. This is also about bat houses. We've had a couple bat houses up at a community garden inside of the city limits of La Crosse, but no bats yet. But I'm wondering, we are kind of within sight of some street lights. And also the railroad track, is that really a big problem? Like they don't want to be close to a street light?
Thanks for the question, Todd. Yes, I think when you're really trying to attract bats to an area, it's helpful to try and remain, keep the disturbance level down to a minimum. And that can definitely, street lights could definitely be an area where, it can expose bats to, owls and other predators that might be attacking them. So I think it's important to consider that. If you can also try and minimize any activity around those bat houses, whether it's a campfire or, like you'd mentioned, the railroad tracks, you can't really do much about that. But, I have seen bat roosts that have over a couple thousand bats, and they're either in a bridge or in a highly
trafficked area.
And it really depends. But I think when you're just trying to bring bats into an area, trying to make an even playing field would be helpful. Absolutely.
Just thinking about it, I would think, street lights are going to attract bugs and insects.
Right.
You'd think that bats would, here's a good dining place.
Sure. Certain bat species will actually be drawn to streetlights, depending on the type of streetlight, because it will attract moths and other insects. And so that's helpful, but there are some species that just will not go in that area and will be deterred from them.
Oh, big browns and little browns? Were they?
Big browns have definitely been seen foraging around street lamps, as well as the eastern red bat, often very seen, but little browns not so much.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Mary, you mentioned the location. I saw, I was looking at your website, and you talk about telling people how to locate and where to locate. Does that come into where do you typically recommend people?
Okay, the bat house should be 10 to 20 feet off the ground and 20 to 30 feet from tree branches to protect the bats from aerial predators. And I get a lot of my information from Bat Conservation International, and they recommend to for the house to receive a minimum of 6 to 8 hours of direct sunlight a day. And if you can't achieve that on your property, to face the house east for morning sun.
Okay, so that makes really good sense. Debbie in Laval has a question. We'll get to you in just a minute. I want to remind you, our two guests today, Paul White, a mammal ecologist with the Department of Natural Resources in the Bureau of Natural Heritage Conservation. Mary Dussling is the owner of Best Bat Houses and makes hand-built Bat Conservation International certified bat houses. I'm Larry Mueller, Lexi Broad, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 11:45, we'll be talking about bird watching and birding groups. That's at 11:45. Right now, we're taking a look at bats and places for them to be, and we'll talk about white nose syndrome and a whole lot of other information that you might be wondering about relating to bats. Paul White and Mary Dussling, our guests today, Paul from the DNR. Mary has her own business, Best Bat Houses, and so it's great to have them along. One open line at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Debbie in Laval now. Debbie, thanks for waiting.
Hi. I was wondering, are they making any headway on the white nose syndrome?
Yeah, on
bats.
On beating that, Paul?
It certainly isn't for lack of trying. We've been considering a variety of treatment options ever since this disease stepped foot into our state. And so the issue with treatment opportunities is that it needs to be effective for the bats, also safe for the bats, but also for their surroundings as well. And so with a disease that has spread so quickly, it's often very challenging for us to kind of keep up with that and make sure that we're meeting all the requirements for a safe and effective treatment. I can say that we commonly work with university as well, so University of Wisconsin, USGS, National Wildlife Health Center, on a couple of different projects looking at ways to try and treat animals, whether it's through a vaccine or through a probiotic, so a bacteria that's potentially beneficial, or such as environmental decontamination. So we've looked at a variety of different options to try and make, you know, at least slow this disease, because at this point it doesn't seem that to be that there's a possibility of stopping it. So we're trying to delay the inevitable, or give bats as much of a fighting chance as possible.
Yeah, and you kind of hope maybe natural selection will be a help down the road. But I got to look at a cave, and you figure out how to clean a cave.
Well, and that's the thing too, right? So we're not even, often caves aren't even on our list because of the variety of endemic species or biota that often live in cave, whether it's cave spiders or you know, a variety of other fungal and bacteria that are there. And so that's why, you know, mines or artificial environments are the ones that we consider the most possible as far as treatment options.
Debbie, thank you. Appreciate your call. So there's, and the long and the short of it is, we don't have, no, there's no magic bullet yet.
Not at the moment, no.
Bill in Arlington Heights, Illinois, up next. Hi, Bill.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
It's a question from Mary. How do you market your bat houses? How do you get them out to the public, and do you have a website?
I do have a website. It's bestbathouses.com. And I also attend the Garden Expo in Madison and the Organic Farmers Conference up in La Crosse. It's the Moses Conference. It's all organic farming, and both of those have been real good locations for me to sell houses. And, of course, I ship them all over the country through my website. And a lot of word of mouth, too. People like my bat houses.
And so, and I think Lexi, do we have a link on our Facebook page? I think we have a link on our Facebook page to your site. What is it again? It's bestbathouses.com. Houses?
Houses.
With an S. Okay.
Yes.
Bestbathouses.com. There we go, Bill.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for that question. Tom in Thiensville, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Morning. I have a question about the keeping them out of your attic and your home.
Yeah.
I would imagine it's a good idea to, you know, to make sure that they don't have any access to your attic, and it's probably not a good place to, you know, allow them to be in from a health standpoint, I would guess, right?
Absolutely. I Paul, you're not going to disagree with that.
No, I think, you know, anytime we can separate humans and wildlife is a good thing, and especially if we can encourage bats to be within our general vicinity but not necessarily in the same home, it's definitely a positive.
And the bats can get through a pretty small area, you know, like the size of a dime or so they can get through.
Yeah, we usually quote about a quarter of an inch. And when you talk, you know, Mary was just referencing 3/4 of an inch space. So that's not much of a space for a space that we're actually trying to encourage bats to get into. And so when you talk about older homes, you know, 1800s, 1900s, there's a lot of cracks and crevices that bats can get into. They certainly won't chew their way in, but they will definitely exploit any possible openings.
And once you get them in the house, getting them out, there's certain times of the year when you know, really don't want to try and exclude them, I believe, because of young.
Correct. Yeah. So June 1st is kind of the official bat birthday that we would designate. And so from June 1st through August 15th, there's a non-exclusion period. So we have a state law that discourages bat activity during that time or does not allow that. And so because what you would potentially do is if you're trying to evict a population that's in your attic, you would put up what we call bat valves, or you'd find these areas.
Excluders,
yep. And so as bats come, the females would be leaving, they would leave, but then you would seal that up, you know, a couple 5 to 6 days afterwards. And so what you would potentially do is leave flightless young inside, which could cause a couple of problems. One is just a lot of dead bats in the attic, which is, you know, we're talking about state-threatened species. But then also you've got frantic mothers trying to get to their pups. And so that's where you increase the rate of bats getting into your human, you know, the living space where they normally wouldn't be getting into.
So then the excluders are kind of cool. I like the way they work because you can get – the bats can get out, but then when they come back, the kind of the flaps down and they're not going to be able to get back in.
Yep, it can be effective. The issue is that it often maybe takes a couple of seasons to find all of the openings because they're really good at finding those small cracks. And so it may be a year to 2 to 3 year process just trying to exclude bats from your home.
Yeah, you have to do it at night, I would expect, if you – have somebody up in the attic and somebody with a big flashlight outside.
That helps, absolutely.
Shining it on, you know, all along under the eaves and all that. That's kind of how you... But once, I mean, once you find the spots, you can get... I mean, it's pretty easy to...
It is, yeah. The spots are often dead giveaways. They're often a little darker than the exterior. So they, as the bats are rubbing their oils off, it might darken as they're coming and going off of there. And so you'll often see guano, not necessarily underneath, but maybe even peppered on the side of the house as well.
There we go. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate the call. I can tell the story. I moved into a farmhouse. Now, this is a long, long time ago. And in the attic, there was like about a 6-inch layer of bat guano. And it's not the kind of thing you want to fool around with, frankly. Cleaning it out, I mean, bat guano is great, can be great fertilizer. But you want to, if you're cleaning something like that out of an area, you better be wearing protection, breathing protection.
Correct.
Yeah, for sure. Kent and Pulaski, thank you so much for calling.
Hi. Yeah. Hey, thanks. I just had a funny story about a bat. Me and a few buddies, we rented a cottage for fishing, and one of my friends was in the bathroom. Bat flew up in his face, and in the rest of the week, we said, well, everybody that went there, we were calling it the bathroom.
The bat room. Well, you know, when you find one in your house, What's the best way to get rid of one? I mean, safely get that bat out.
Well, if you can quarantine the bat into a particular area, ideally having a outside access. So if it's a window or a door that you could open and just allow the bat to go out in its own accord, turning on all the lights and turning on music and all the rest is not going to really help anything. I think the best option is to try and allow it to go on its own accord, because if you can think about the bat's perspective, it doesn't want to be there any more than you want it to be there. So the idea is to try and encourage it to go out. If for some reason it lands and you've just tried for hours and you can't get that bat out and it lands on the wall, then we recommend putting a box over the top or some sort of container that you can slip a piece of cardboard, rigid cardboard, between that, and then it falls into place. And then you can walk outside, set it down on the ground near a tree or a log pile so it can go out.
What about a fish net? Here's Kent, a fisherman.
Well, sure. That's probably, I would say that that's a last resort, just because bats can get caught up in there and then you might end up injuring the animal. Absolutely.
Yeah, there we go. Well, so good story about your bat room. I appreciate that, Kent. Gary in Boscobel, let's go to you. Hi, Gary.
Thank you, Larry. I'd like to ask Paul a question about the current atmosphere in the Department of Natural Resources and the suppression of some of the freedom of thought. Is Paul, are you allowed to, if bats are in trouble here in Wisconsin due to climate change, are you allowed to talk about that? And are you allowed to use the word threatened and endangered species when it comes to talking about bats?
Well, thank you for the call, Larry. I'm sorry, Gary. Bats face a variety of issues, whether it's through the changing climate or through human disturbance. Obviously, white noise syndrome and wind farms are up there as far as the top issues that we deal with as far as bats. I'm allowed to say threatened and endangered because they are, in fact, threatened or endangered.
Yeah.
So they are considered state threatened species, four of the species that we have in the state that hibernate. It's a little brown bat, big brown bat, eastern pipistrelle, and northern longeared. Northern longeared are also federally listed. So
An official designation.
An official designation. And we, before white noise syndrome even came in the state, we recognized the importance. And my supervisors, as well as all the way up the chain, everybody considered bats to be a very important resource. And so I've never seen anything that to suggest otherwise. Everybody's
good.
Been very supportive. And so, we have a lot of people working on that, and I thank everybody for that. Absolutely.
Ron in Monroe, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. See, I got actually two questions. I got a spot on the river, and I would like a bat house because I could get rid of a few more mosquitoes, and I have a bordering swamp. I got plenty of barn swallows, which I would like to learn how to build a nesting joint for them also. But would I put my bat house out into the swamp, as you said earlier about putting the house away from tree line? Well, I could put it out in the swamp or out in the bordering field. What would be better, out in the field or out in the swamp?
Well, wherever most of the insects are, I would say swamp, because insects breed in swamps, and the main thing is to get it 10 to 20 feet off the ground, and the four-chamber house can be mounted on a building or post or pole mounted out in the, out in the open, so that would be your best bet. But I would also include putting a baffle under the house if you're post or pole mounting it to keep any unwanted predators away from climbing up and harming the bats.
Yeah, a baffle makes sense.
Well, are the barn swallows going to take over the bat house, or?
No,
I got oodles of them.
Not likely. I don't think, probably because of the width of the entrance area that you build, Mary.
Correct.
Right.
And also the bats enter from the bottom, and the chambers are only 3/4 of an inch, so.
Yeah, and Paul, you were going to add to that as well.
Right. Well, I think that you're asking for, you've got the perfect shift change available. So you've got barn swallows taking care of insects during the day, and then if you can encourage bats, you've got nighttime flying insects or predators.
Where I can get like a plan to build some type of nesting spot for the barn swallows, because they're always trying to put them on my boat lift, and I don't want them there. I don't want to get rid of the swallows, but I don't want them nesting them there either.
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
I do not know of anything.
I'm trying because I know UW Extension has a publication called Birdhouses or something like that, but I don't think they've got one specifically for the birds you're interested in. So I'm not sure. Maybe somebody else listening can call in and let us know.
Or possibly your next guest might have an idea.
Our next guest might have an idea as well. So stay listening, Ron. And it was barn swallows, right?
Yes.
He was interested. I'm going to make a note of that. Barn swallow houses. I'm writing that right down on my next script information. And we'll see what we can come up with. So stay listening, Ron.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. If Neil puts, he emailed, if he puts a bat house up, will that stop bats from going into his attic? Not necessarily, not unless he...
No. It's a great idea to put up a bat house, especially when you're trying to exclude bats from an attic space, because not only are you allowing them to explore a possible area, but then you're encouraging them to stay in the area, and they already are familiar with the general area. So that if you can exclude them during the right times of the year, you know, not between June 1st and August 15th, but any time after that, and put up that bat house, allow them to explore it and find it, then that's your best case scenario for getting bats out of your attic and then keeping them close by.
And Mary, I think on your site you talk about the fact that you put up one of your bat houses, and now tomorrow they might not all show up. It might take sometimes more than a year. Sometimes
correct. It can take a couple of years for bats to find the house, but once they do, repeat use is the norm, and they'll be back year after year. So it's really a good idea, and you do want bats on your property. They're so beneficial.
Patience is the key here, the way it sounds. Is it true that I've heard this, that if you put a little, season it a little bit with some bat guano, if you happen to have it, that will help attract bats?
The only thing I've read on that ever is that that's a myth.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything that suggests that it actually works.
All right, so there's one thing you don't have to do, Ron. Let's see, Mary in Madison has something for us. Mary, hi.
Hello, and thank you. Yes, I was wondering, the evolutionary record morphology, could you kind of sketch that?
So we have two different types of bats. They can be they're grouped into a megachioptera and a microchioptera. And so the mega are kind of our flying foxes. And so they both evolved flight in different ways. The megas are the bats that generally not... they don't follow echolocation, or they don't use it as much. They rely more on sight. And so those are the big, beautiful bats. And, in fact, you might actually see one at the Milwaukee Zoo, or if you're interested in attending the Wisconsin Bat Festival again this year, we have at the Mitchell Domes in August 26th, we'll have our next Wisconsin Bat Festival. But we'll have an Egyptian flying fox, which... is their wingspan is as big as I am tall, which is about 6 feet. So it's a pretty neat animal to see. But so those are the bats that that are eating dates and a variety of other fruits. The other microcrafter are small bats, and so those are primarily making up 75% of the bats that we know of the 1,300 species. So those are the ones that eat a variety of different things, whether it's insects, other bats themselves, frogs, scorpions. They eat a variety of things, and so evolutionarily they kind of diverted. I wouldn't be able to say exactly when that happened.
Yeah.
But I know that some of the earliest records that we have of the bat fossils came from Wyoming and such. So yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Mary. Tony and Amory, it's your turn. Hi, Tony.
Hi. I was wondering about an argument to try to get my significant other to let me have a bat house.
What do you tell people, Mary?
Well, I generally tell people that one little brown bat can eat about 1,000 mosquito-sized insects in an hour. And that's just one. And my smallest house will hold between 50 and 75 bats. So that's a lot of insect control. And I've also had people come up to me when I have my booth in different locations telling me about a campgrounds that they go to because they've got bat houses all over the campgrounds. And they're like, there's practically not a single insect. So they're just tremendous at insect control.
Okay.
All right. And aside from the environmental things that you were talking about, Paul, as the good things they do,
sure.
There's a lot. I mean, just review a couple of those.
Well,
pollinators.
Pollinators, but unfortunately, you don't have any of those yeah. here in Wisconsin. But, I think the overall insect control that they have, and just obviously just as Mary has learned, is just it's a very, they're a very interesting species. They're the only group of animals, and they're the only mammal that has the ability to sustain flight. So that's neat in of itself. To encourage bats and then to watch them come out at night, well, once you have them in a bat house, is a pretty fun thing. You can grab your favorite beverage and just watch them as they come out. Like Mary said, this is a theme that we hear a lot from state parks that have bats, is they often go there because the kids love to go out and see them. So if they want to host a party, then I would suggest Tony to have maybe a bat watching event when you put up your new bat house.
Sounds like a plan. Thanks, Tony, for calling. And Henry in Rhinelander, your turn. Hi, Henry.
Hey, hi there. I was wondering, you know, like for many years, I had upwards of 200 bats that were roosting underneath the ridges in my metal roof. And there were times when I was cooperating with the University of Wisconsin down there in Madison for a bat project. And they were having me count the bats at dawn and dusk. And like I said, upwards of 200. Last year, they just stopped coming. I didn't have any bats at all last year.
Oh.
And I thought it was a good life for them. So what could have happened?
Well, Henry, unfortunately, this is likely due to white nose syndrome. We've noticed, especially in the northern parts of the state, definitely in Door County, Iron County, and such, that we've seen populations that have historically been strong, like yours, 200 bats, couple thousand bats, that are gone, and that has a lot to do with the spread of white nose syndrome within the state, but then also our bordering states too. So we know that the Upper Peninsula of Michigan has a variety of different hibernacula that bats use, and we know that they cross between Michigan and Wisconsin pretty readily, and so it's likely an effect of white nose syndrome.
That's really too bad. Thank you, Henry, for calling. And there's a guy who, you know, likes to see bats and wants them there. And, you know, we hope that they're not gone forever.
No, and if we can use the East as something to look at, they definitely still have populations around. They're just much smaller. And we're hoping that if we can't intervene the way we'd like to, that our populations will still remain, but at much smaller levels.
And for those who want to take a look at your bat houses, Mary, again, what's your website?
It's bestbathouses.com.
Bestbathouses.com, and Lexi's got that up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. So you can always go there and take a look and just click on it and take you right to Mary's site. Well, I want to thank you both so much for being with us today. It was a lot of fun. Learned a lot about bat houses and bats, and hopefully we can visit again. Thank you.
Thank you very much,
Larry.
Lots of fun. Paul White, mammal ecologist with the DNR's Bureau of Natural Heritage Conservation, and Mary Dussling, owner of Best Bat Houses. She makes hand-built Bat Conservation International certified bat houses. So a lot of fun to talk with them. And we're gonna stay with things that fly. Coming up next, we're going to talk about bird watching at any age. A couple of guests for you, including kind of a young guy who founded the Wisconsin Young Birders Club. So that'll be coming up next here on the Ideas Network. You stay with us.